Hi, welcome to another Revenue Hub Expert Insights discussion. Today we're joined by two guests from Beyond Price, Neville Isaac, Chief Customer Officer, and Yannick Heitmüller, Sales Director. We've broken our conversation into two parts. This is part one, and part two will come out early next week. In this discussion, we talk about two core topics, price fairness and price identity. In part two, we look at how these two elements feed into customer lifetime value. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started. Hi guys, great to see you again. Great to have you join us on another one of our Revenue Hub discussions that we have going on here. A lot to cover today, and we'll get into that in a moment. But probably useful if we get you guys to give us a brief introduction as to who you are. Neville, you've joined us before on a previous video, so maybe if I could pass it over to you and you could kind of kick us off, and then Yannick will come to you in a moment. So over to you, Neville.
Great. Thanks, Trevor. And nice to be back. My name is Neville Isaac. I'm a hotelier. I've been a hotelier since I graduated, which is a long time ago. I'm based in Spain, in Madrid. I specialize in revenue management, and I'm currently, for the last 3 years, working in Beyond Price. And Beyond Price, we provide revenue management technology to hotels, so an RMS, amongst other things. That's it in a nutshell. 27 years resumed in 1 minute.
Perfect. And Yannick, your first time you're joining us. So nice to have you. Nice to have you on board here. If I could just sort of hand it over to you for a brief introduction, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Trevor. I'm really excited to be here for the first time. So my name is Yannick Heitmüller. I'm originally from Germany. But I'm also living here in Spain, in Madrid. I've been with Beyond Price for 2 years, and I'm the sales director for Europe. We are in a very exciting stage with the company right now, where we're expanding across different markets, mainly here in Europe, and that's where my responsibilities are.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Now, number of areas we're going to touch on today, and going to try and make sure we keep it tight and don't wander too far off topic, because we can all talk about a lot of these things for ages. But the areas we're looking to cover and the purpose of this is firstly to look at what you guys refer to as price fairness. And I know that's a terminology that you use within Beyond Price. So we want to kind of dig into that and what does that actually mean. Then keen to look at how that feeds into around the actual price identity. And then really we're going to look at how those two areas link into the customer lifetime value. And then a number of the factors that we're planning on touching on. I guess the question that would be asked is to, okay, that's all well and good, but how does that apply within the current situation that we're facing with the pandemic around COVID? So that's what we're hopefully going to touch on, make it as informative and engaging as we possibly can. So let's start off first and foremost with talking about price fairness and what that actually means from your guys' perspective. So Yannick, do you want to take us off on that one?
Yeah, sure. Price fairness is a very interesting concept, we think, which has pretty much been neglected in the past in the hotel world. So maybe it makes sense to start with a very simple definition of what price fairness means in general. Mm-hmm. Price fairness means that the quality of a service that somebody is offering has to justify the price that somebody is paying for it, also considering alternative products on the market. And by the way I say this, you can already guess that we can split this into three factors, especially if you want to translate this into the hotel world.
Yeah.
If you want to look at the quality of the service, then it's obviously the quality of your hotel. Those are objective quality factors, and a very basic example would be your room size, for example. Yeah. If you want to know if this justifies the price that somebody is paying, well, there's another factor you can look at as a hotelier, which is your online reputation, because this is a direct reflection of the guest satisfaction post-stay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if we talk about considering alternative products on the market, this means that we need to look at your competitors, obviously.
Yep.
And there again, it's very important to say that it's not only your competitors' rates, yeah, that's something a lot of people are already looking at. But you also need to look at the competitors' quality, and there again, the objective quality and the honor reputation. Yeah, so that's where we get a bit from the general definition of price fairness to what does this mean for the hotels.
Yeah, and why? I mean, price fairness, as you said, it touches on many areas. Why do you guys see it as being so important? And picking up on your point, you said before, it's not something that's often been discussed. Why is that the case? Why has it not been discussed? Why is it so important?
I think there's several reasons, and obviously the immediate purpose or objective of a revenue management technology is to optimize revenues, optimize RevPAR. Mm-hmm. If you hear a term like price fairness, a lot of people might think, so you want us to lower our rates just to please our guests?
Yeah,
and that's obviously not what we're trying to do. Price fairness is something else. Price fairness means that you are able to identify exactly what price a guest is willing to pay for the quality that you offer.
Okay.
Yeah, so we really want you to identify the optimal price point at which you can capture also the most profitable demand in the end. And there's simply nobody who's really doing this right now. You know, it's and it makes sense if you think about what matters to you when you stay at a hotel, and also how afterwards you would evaluate your stay at the hotel. The price quality relationship is quite important, and so it does make sense to take it into account.
So can you give us, I mean, without naming particular hotels that you might work with, but can you give us a kind of real world example of how price fairness would differentiate from, because everyone looks at their comp set. So everyone is looking at their pricing against their comp set, but you're overlaying different criteria and factors in here. So can you kind of give us an example? And Neville, kind of feel free to jump in here as well.
I mean, in the end, I think it's a question about how many dimensions you're looking at, mm-hmm. Because price is only one of the dimensions. But if you really want to position yourselves, and that's any hotel, I don't think it's even necessary to give a specific example. Any hotel who wants to position themselves in the competitive set, it's not enough to look at only the dimension of pricing. Yeah, because, well, then that's only horizontal or vertical, but it's only one dimension. Yeah. As soon as you add the quality of your competitors, then you really have that three-dimensional space, so to say, and you really can navigate within that graph or whatever illustration you want to have and really identify the optimal positioning.
That makes sense.
Yeah, if I could jump in here with, I'm Mr. Anecdote. So, and this is something I mentioned to you the other day. I was the general manager of a hotel in London quite a long time ago. And I was the general manager of a hotel during the turn of the millennium. So this was going to be the biggest night ever in history in London. And there was a lot of events organized. Hoteliers were rubbing our hands with glee about the amount of money we were going to make for this night. Bearing in mind that New Year's Eve in London is normally quite a good night in a way. So we all started putting our prices. I was in the general manager of a boutique hotel in Marylebone, where my average daily rate was about £220. Mm-hmm. And we were charging upwards of £1,000 a room.
Wow.
And so were all of our competitors.
Yeah.
And obviously higher up in the upscale, they were charging more, and lower down, they were charging a little bit less. But you were probably paying £800 for a basic three-star hotel. We thought this was going to be like the biggest moneymaker that had ever happened. What actually happened in London on the 31st of December, 1999, was that it was not full.
Right.
London was not full. There is a psychological element to pricing, I think, which sometimes we tend to put in the background. People just didn't think that this was an acceptable price to pay for the product at that time. Bearing in mind, people knew that it was a busy day, but there was just a psychological threshold, which people weren't prepared to pay £1,000 for a room that normally costs 250. That's a kind of example of where price fairness is an element to take into account. And people do evaluate and associate and compare when they're looking at prices. And it's something that kind of goes out with simply a mathematical calculation of the potential demand that you have for your hotel.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And in terms of just coming back to picking up on that, because that deals with some of the outliers, doesn't it? Those kind of main events, like we're dealing with some issues now where demand is low, but hoping it will pick up. So naturally, hotels are going to be looking at demand and thinking, OK, can I raise my prices? Champions League events, you know, are examples of where people put their prices up. So you've got those outlier of events where you've got that psychological element kicks in around what people think is fair. I think also, Yannick, I just want to pick up on what you were saying at the beginning around the definition of it, where you were talking about the services of the hotel, and you also said the kind of, did you say the quality of the hotel or the quality of the provisions? So what additional data are you pulling in to kind of influence, I guess, this algorithm around the price fairness piece?
Yeah, there's a lot of different data points. And it's actually surprising that we're the only ones to do this because the information is out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's different data sources and most of the information you even find on booking.com. That can be the size of your standard double room, for example. That could be, do you have a swimming pool? That could be, do you have 24/7 room service? But this could also be the speed of your Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a lot of information that we can automatically pull from the internet. But then if you want and you have some additional knowledge as the hotelier, you can also refine it and say maybe, okay, well, my internet is much faster than my competitors.
Right.
So there's, of course, room for you to play with this as well. But the general information is out there. And we try to take into account as much objective quality information as possible, because that, in the end, this granularity allows us to really understand the complete picture, you know.
Would things like reviews get brought into it, or is that not an element that gets pulled into that data? So what reviews there might be on TripAdvisor or anything like this, or is that not a factor that's pulled in?
That is a factor that's pulled in, but there we have to distinguish between the objective quality and then the more subjective quality, you could say.
Yeah.
Because the owner reputation obviously is a subjective perception of whether the quality was worth the price that was paid. And that's also what I meant in the beginning. You know, we can split basically the definition into three different pieces if you want. The quality of the service would be more of the objective quality factors, but then justifying the price, that relates more to the subjective experience of the guest. And that's something that we identify in the online reputation. Yeah. So basically the hotel quality score that we identify for your hotel, if you're a hotelier, and all of your competitors, it's a combination of these objective quality factors and the online reputation.
I've got you. So if I put, as I try to do in any of these conversations, put myself in two shoes, either one as the general manager running a property or two as a consumer. So I'm going to kind of put my consumer hat on for a moment, leisure rather than business, if I can put it that way. So if I've understood what you're saying is, if we, let's say we take a 4-star hotel, maybe city destination like Madrid, for instance, Barcelona, somewhere like that, then there would be, if I'm looking and searching direct websites, OTAs, there's a typical price and the description of the hotel, and that price is adjusting based on how revenue managers will look at their comp set and what their comp set is doing and what their RMS is probably advising them to be doing. Yeah. But what you're now saying is that if I'm looking and thinking, okay, I want to have a swimming pool, or I want a fast internet, or I want a larger room, then if I was looking, if I'd identified I've got a price range, a budget that's acceptable to me, then if I was looking at 10 different properties, we'll say an OTA because it's just an easy place, or Google to go and look, then what you're outlining here is if your competitors are these 10 competitors I'm looking at, but if you have a better Wi-Fi, if you have a swimming pool, if you have larger rooms than your other competitors may have, then that you would be saying that there is an argument to have a slightly enhanced price because the facilities that are being offered in your comp set, although the price point might be similar, your facilities are better and therefore could justify a higher price. And then if that is supported by some of the subjectivity around the reviews or the objectivity in the reviews, then that reinforces the argument to having that slightly higher price. Have I kind of got the concept of that right?
That's pretty much the essence of it. Yeah. I mean, in the end, the where the technology really helps you is to identify exactly how much higher or lower your price should be. Mm-hmm. How I mean, again, the word positioning, where exactly do you fit in within your comp set?
Yeah.
That's really what we try to figure out.
I've got you. Yeah. So it's the positioning. So you know where you sit in the comp set, but it's the positioning within the comp set and then how that reflects the pricing around that.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And one of the areas we're going to touch on is also how that feeds into price identity. But before we move across to kind of touch into there, is there anything else on the price fairness piece? Because it feels as if now that we're starting to understand where our positioning is, that kind of can lead us a little bit into around this price identity piece. But I don't want to move on too soon before we've covered anything on the price fairness. Anything else to add into that, Neville? You got anything else to add into that piece?
I think, Yannick, and you've done a pretty good job of putting your finger on it, actually.
I think, Neville, you touched on something around price identity or the terminology of price identity. And it seemed to fit. There seemed to be two elements and it almost seemed to sit a little bit into that, whether it's that psychological piece or just understanding that there is a trustworthiness about the price fairness aligned with the services, aligned with reputation. So just can you just kind of pick up on that area and touch on that for us a little bit, please?
I mean, to me, this is one of the areas where we talk a lot about discipline convergence and revenue management or in hotels. Mm-hmm. And this is an area where revenue management and marketing converge to some extent. And we can't just look at pricing from a revenue management perspective, or we should also bear in mind that there are other implications of how we do our pricing. And there is a psychological aspect to pricing, which is undeniable. And this is what we call price identity. So, and it's not a term we invented. This is a concept that is known in pricing, not necessarily in hotels. Mm-hmm. And what we mean by that is that pricing is not just how much money you get from your room or how much profit you get. You're also, to some extent, transmitting messages about your brand or your hotel via your pricing. So to some extent, how you price is a reflection of your philosophy or your business, the way your business should be working. And hotels should bear this in mind. And price fairness would be an element of this for me. But the way you do your pricing should enable potential customers and customers to understand a bit the way that your company works. And I give you an example here, which is really basic, but let's say, for example, you book a hotel room because you're going to go to Berlin in March, not this March. you book it 3 months in advance and it costs you 80 euros. And you're very happy because it's a nice hotel and it's in a good location. And then a week before, one of your friends says, hey, I'm going to come with you. And you say, hey, I'm booked in this hotel. Why don't you book? And they book it for 59 euros. Mm-hmm. You are going to be disappointed and mistrust to a certain extent this brand because of this. Was what's the justification for you having booked it 3 months out, paying more than your friend who's booking now? So this is just an example whereby you, even unconsciously, you're transmitting a set of values to your customer via your pricing. Mm-hmm. This is just one example. There could be many more. And what would happen in this case, in this example that I give, is that the person who, many things could happen. The guy who booked far in advance might cancel his reservation and rebook at the cheaper price, which from a revenue management perspective is not good.
Yeah.
Or they might say, God, these people are trying to con me. I'm going to go somewhere else. Or they might stay, but the next time they want to come to Berlin, they might say, I'm not too sure about this hotel, or I'm not going to book it right now because I'm not confident about the price that I'm being shown at this moment in time. So if you don't think about these things, you can transmit mixed messages to customers. This is just an example. There's many others you could take into account here. But if you do think about them, and if you do transmit values by your pricing, and to be honest, airlines are much better at this than hotels, it helps that you have a defined identity, which is a simple one of the elements that helps you to define your brand identity. And people understand you, you send clear messages, people can clearly understand the different products that you have and why they have a different price. All this sort of thing feeds into your price identity. And one of the things that we think feeds into it is price fairness, that people perceive that the product that they paid for reflected the price that they paid. Bearing in mind, obviously, that people understand that there will be some fluctuation according to demand. Everyone understands that.
I was going to say, because some of this seems to go against the normal revenue management practices. This like by a price identity, this is the price we charge for our price fairness for our services and our offering.
But I mean, I think, and I think we have to go beyond revenue management just being me making as much money as possible tomorrow, and move to a stage where, and we have to do this, and we talk about, this is one of the many things that we talk about in revenue management and we don't really do. Revenue management should be maximizing the long-term profitability of a business. And sometimes you'll take decisions based on short-term benefit, but sometimes you should take decisions based on long-term benefit. And in that situation, I think price identity is important because it can have an impact on the way guests will book you in the future, or the way whether guests will come back. And there's a lot to think about there. And there's a lot of KPIs that hoteliers haven't necessarily looked at, which we should start looking at, I think.
Such as any areas?
Well, I mean, Yannick is the big expert on this, but we need to be looking at customer lifetime value.
Right. Yeah. And
we need to be looking at customer retention. We want customers to come back.
Yeah.
Because the cost of acquisition of new customers is high, very high. Hotels have a very high cost of acquisition. So it's better if they come back. And it's better if they come back frequently.
And we talk a lot about loyalty as well, don't we? And I mean, you know, there are elements that this all seems to feed into, that psychological aspect of feeling like you trust somebody. And just picking up, and I think it leads us nicely into that customer lifetime value and looking at around loyalty as well. But just picking up on your point where you mentioned about airlines are often better at this than hotels. I mean, yes, okay, there are less airlines than there are hotels, so it may be easier for them. But, you know, when you look at the low-cost airlines, you know what you're paying, you know what you're getting, you know what their offering is, as opposed to some of the higher-end carriers, for instance. And in a way, I guess where you're looking at it from a consumer point of view, if I was to know that if I like to travel around Europe and I can associate myself with a particular brand, back to your price fairness. If I feel consistently the price I'm being asked to pay reflects the services that I am being offered and the continual work they are doing to provide that level of service, which is underpinned partly by their reviews, I feel comfortable about their price is fair. If I then recognize that they seem to be fair in all of the different locations where they may be, then I'm going to, there is a subconscious element that when I would imagine when I'm thinking of booking a weekend away or a week away, I'm going to naturally start by aligning myself with someone that I think is offering me a fair price for a fair service. And that then is associated with their brand identity. And therefore, they start to retain my loyalty, which I guess leads us into that customer lifetime value piece. Is that right?
I completely agree with you. And it's particularly important for chains or brands. Mm-hmm. Your price identity shouldn't be different from one hotel to another and within one brand. Mm-hmm. Because then it won't create this effect that you're talking about. And again, if we go back to the example of airlines, Ryanair has an extremely clear price identity.
Extremely clear.
I know exactly what to expect. And there are people, I know people who don't fly in Ryanair because they have decided that they would rather have a different set of brand values that Ryanair doesn't transmit. And then I know people who complain about Ryanair constantly, but still use them. Mm-hmm. But this is very, very common because it's a bit going back to what you said. You know what you're paying for. You know what to expect at this price. As long as the person providing this service follows through with what they promise, so yeah. the value proposition, then you're happy or you're a customer.
Yeah.
I mean,
and maybe a repeat customer.
Ryanair in the hotel business, but it's just an example of clarity, vision. Identity is very, very clear. And then consumers have the ability to decide whether that's what they want of us or they don't want. So it definitely has an impact and people are loyal to brands for a lot of reasons, but yeah. One of them is pricing.
So that's the end of part one. I'd like to thank Neville and Yannick for joining us, and I hope you found the conversation interesting. Part 2 will be coming out early next week, where we'll be picking up our conversation and looking at how price fairness and price identity feed into customer lifetime value. Feel free to get in contact with us if you have any questions. We're always interested in your thoughts, and we're happy to follow up with our guests. If you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. And if you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel. The link is in the podcast notes. If you do happen to watch it on YouTube, it would be great if you would consider subscribing. It really does help out the channel. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.